I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together. Have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we're on episode number 43, and we're doing Black Swan.
Dun, 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 dun. I hated this movie.
Wow, spoilers. Well, I guess we could just end the podcast there.
Mm-hmm. No stars. Go. No. No, I have thoughts. I have thoughts.
Oh, I can only imagine from what I heard last night, slightly.
Yes.
Through my headphones as I'm making dinner.
Yes, when I was talking to my ballerina friend about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, let's kind of back that up and bring it back to Black Swan was directed by Darren Aronofsky, director of 1998's Pi. And such movies, and other such movies as Requiem for a Dream, which I know
Yikes.
Is a personal favorite of Maggie's.
Oh, yeah, I definitely didn't regret every minute I spent watching that downer of a fucking movie.
The Fountain, which you and I watched together.
Oh, yeah, isn't that the one with
Hugh Jackman
and Kate Winslet?
Is it Kate Winslet?
It might be. I don't know. I remember just being like, what the fuck is this movie? And then later somebody being like, this is my favorite movie of all time. And I went, really? At that face that you make when somebody's like, I love Brussels sprouts. And you make a face and you go, really? Yeah. I am not a big fan of his directive style. Although I have not seen The Wrestler, so.
Neither have I.
But I've heard good things.
I haven't seen The Wrestler, but I have gotten through The Fountain with you.
Yeah.
Noah.
Oh, yeah. No, I never watched that. I Noah watched that.
It's very much like, yes, the story of Noah, but also very much filmed like an Aronofsky film. Mother!
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely fucking not.
I know you know a little bit of what it's about and how it looks, because I think you've seen some clips.
Mm-hmm. I read the Wikipedia plot line, and I went, the fuck? And just went, nah, I'm out.
I watched that one. It felt like a fever dream. And The Whale with Brendan Fraser, which I saw and really liked. Really liked that
and
one.
And I didn't watch it because it looked like a fucking bummer, man.
It is.
And life is too short to watch movies that are a fucking bummer, man.
It's so good, though. Requiem for the Dream, The Wrestler, Black Swan, and The Whale are all Oscar-nominated movies. And all of those movies won, except for Requiem for a Dream.
Won.
Requiem was just nominated. Everybody else won an Oscar. Not just for acting or directing, screenplay, whatever it was. Black Swan was written by Mark Heyman and Andres Hines and John J. McLaughlin.
Oh, okay.
Of what they have done has been minimal. Mark Heyman produced The Wrestler, and John J. McLaughlin worked on HBO's Carnival and the Alfred Hitchcock movie with Anthony Hopkins.
I've seen none of that.
This
movie was written by men, correct?
Yes.
Shocking. Shocking. Written and directed by men. With their man feelings and thoughts. That these characters were written by men. And what I mean by that is that sometimes as a woman, you're watching a female protagonist of a movie or a TV show or whatever, and you're like, she was written by a man. She was written by a man in the ideal of what a man thinks a woman should be or should act or whatever. And then as a woman, you're watching it and you're like, there's no fucking way she would act like this. Like, what the fuck? Like, of course this movie was written by a man, because this movie is just a bunch of misogyny. Like, it's a misogyny sandwich with a side of misogyny french fries with a milkshake made of misogyny. And I
Yeah, the
hated it.
No, but the movie's doing that on purpose.
I know. I know.
It's showing how terrible men are when it comes to these issues and situations.
I know, but then they really doubled down with a lot of the shit that they did, and then there was so much unnecessary... Oh, can we just get into it, or do you want to... Why don't you go through the cast, and then I'll get into my rants, because I have a lot of feelings about how women are treated in this film, and...
But it's done on purpose to show how...
Is it done on purpose, or is it done for funsies? Because that sex scene was wildly unnecessary, shot like porn, wildly unnecessary, gross, and written by a man. I get that it's like, yes, okay, showing what women go through... in the world of ballet, which I will get into a little bit later because I had a long conversation with a good friend of mine who used to train for ballet and has done ballet for a very long time in her life. The way that women are treated in the ballet world is fucked up. And yes, it does kind of like, according to Karen, she was like, it sort of showed the world what actually happens in ballet companies with women. But... You know, now, what are we at? It was in 2010, so we're now at 14 years later. Things are starting to, like, the ballet world is starting to finally come into its own, like, Me Too movement, for lack of a better word. This movie was so gross in how it treated women, and especially how it treated its main character, Natalie Portman, that I hated it. And it was unnecessary, and it was gross. We'll just get into it eventually. But I'm not gonna derail the conversation now.
Just later.
So just later, yeah. Like, the train is still on course until we get into it.
Well, let's talk about Clint Marshall, who did the music for this movie.
Yes. No, I don't. You know what? My main takeaway from the music in this movie was just the Black Swan music. I don't actually actively remember any other music. But I can't say
it
that...
I think it was like Black Swan music, but then mixed in with like his own...
Yes.
Something that sounds like Swan-like.
Yes. I will say that Clint Mansell... I mean, for God's sakes, he did that version of that song from Requiem for a Dream that became Requiem for a Tower that was created for the Lord of the Rings Two Towers trailer, which fucking slaps.
It's a good one.
He's done some good work. He's not...
Well, he's in my favorite Matthew McConaughey movie.
Which is?
Sahara, baby.
Isn't that one with, I can see her face, but I can't remember her name.
Penelope Cruz. That's right, and Steve Zahn.
Yeah, she was never Matthew really McConaughey my favorite person.
Well, just in general?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of her and her work.
Oh, well, that's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, she's there, she's fine. But anyways, back to Clint Mansell. He's done...
Well, he did The Fountain and the Wrestler.
Yeah.
He did Moon with Sam Rockwell that I really liked. It's a really good movie. People should check out Moon. He also did the music for Mass Effect 3, which is my favorite music of the trilogy.
Yes. Yes. No, I was trying to remember what about his music that I loved so much. Mass Effect 3, the music is stunning. There's a song called I'm Alone and I'm Alive, I think. That's flawless. Yeah, no, the music at the end of Mass Effect 3 makes me cry every single time, so I've got to give him up to that.
He also did the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror.
That is the only episode of Black Mirror that I like.
And I own the
San Junipero
soundtrack on vinyl.
Of course you do.
And then now currently he's doing the music for Creature Commandos.
Oh, which we haven't gotten into
on
just
HBO
yet,
Max.
But we want to.
It just came out.
We're
busy people.
We're so fucking busy.
We have a podcast, so of course everything that we were already busy doing
yes,
is now even more busy doing. Yeah. So television has kind of taken a backseat.
It really has.
In a way.
It really has.
And movies, of course, we're always watching movies. Yeah. But
it's hard, folks, when you devote yourself to a podcast where you watch a bunch of movies. It's tough. And, you know, unfortunately, for a little behind-the-scenes look into the Movie Mingle world, we are recording this very soon to right before it comes out because we're just that, you know, we used to have a really nice buffer, and now the buffer is gone.
The buffer is has disintegrated.
We've got to work in January. We've got to put in some effort to get that buffer back, because this has been tough. Between the holidays and birthdays and everything else, we've just, we missed that buffer.
We are still enjoying doing this podcast.
Oh, we love it. Yeah.
If it really got to it where life just didn't allow it, that would suck.
So much. I'd be so sad.
So I am thankful that we still have enough time to talk to each other about
make it happen.
Movies, yeah. Whether we like them or not.
Cheers, my love.
Let me grab my can.
As we toast our black cherry white claws.
Mm. Cinematography was done by Matthew Libatique. 87 projects under his belt as a cinematographer, and has worked on every single one of Darren Aronofsky's films. So,
I will say I did not enjoy the handheld quality of the way this film was shot. Yes.
Man, that's one of my favorite parts.
While I appreciated the essentially point of view scenes where we would see the back of Natalie Portman's head as she was going into the ballet company or being led around a party or whatever, there is a shakiness to a handheld camera that I don't enjoy. Sometimes it felt slightly voyeuristic, but I felt that way at the beginning of the film and then kind of forgot about it as the film progressed and I got angrier and angrier about what was happening. I wasn't thrilled with the sort of grainy, like, handheld aspect of it all.
Yeah. Black Swan is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. It has an 85% from critics and an 84% from audiences.
So it's a solid B movie. It is. It's a solid B movie.
Sure.
It's what? It's a solid B. There are some critics. I was reading some of the reviews on how it was received on Wikipedia, and some people were like, I fucking hated it. And I was like, yeah, I get you guys. But I understand why this movie will go down in cinematic history for what it was, and for the performance, for Natalie Portman's performance especially. I do not think that this movie will be looked at fondly in 50 years in terms of the misogyny that is just so fucking ripe in this film.
But when you in film, when you're really wanting to bring a point home, don't you kind of go overboard when you...
But is that the point? Or is that the gross funsies?
Do you think the writer and directors were just doing it just for kicks?
I don't know. I can't say. But what I do know is that Natalie Portman's character, despite being an adult woman the entire time, started off essentially as a 6-year-old girl and ended as a full-grown adult. And she was sexualized the entire time. And that made my skin crawl. It made my skin fucking crawl, and I did not like it. I did not like...
You mean she has a personality of a 6-year-old?
Yes. I even wrote down that she's like a giant 6-year-old. And I had to then think about the age, because I feel like a 7-year-old is a little too self-aware, and a 5-year-old is not. She starts this movie with the mentality of a 6-year-old. She's got all those stuffed animals in her room. Her voice is very baby-ish. And the way that she acts and talks, her emotions, the way her mother dotes upon her, it's all very much trapping this adult woman in her adolescence. But in the meantime, she is still being sexualized and preyed upon by the men around her. And she doesn't know how to handle that, because despite the fact that she claims she has had a couple boyfriends and some sex, I doubt that she has. I think she's lying when she's like, oh, I have some experience. Bitch, no, you haven't. She starts this movie off as a sexualized young girl. And she ends it as a sexually abused woman who thinks that it's all her fault. And the man gets all the credit for it. Or for all the good things that she has done. I can't say whether or not Darren Aronofsky did that for funsies, but he definitely did it on purpose, and I did not like it.
Yeah, he did it on purpose because I think he's trying to show the difference between the good
this is also his retelling.
The good girl and the bad.
Yeah, this is his telling of the white of Black Swan, yeah. Right? So, you know, the White Swan, Natalie Portman, versus the Black Swan, Mila Kunis. Like, I get all of that. It doesn't mean I have to like it because it made me feel gross. I did not enjoy watching a adult woman with the mentality of a 6-year-old get sexually. I don't think
she had a mentality of a 6-year-old.
She did.
I think
those stuffed animals, well, the way her mother doted upon her, dressed.
We were just talking about this recently with Toy Story 3, how people do keep, you know, those kind of things around them as comfort. And it doesn't mean that you have the mentality of a 6-year-old.
No. Caveman?
I think...
The way that I viewed this movie as a full-ass grown adult woman, I looked at Natalie Portman's character. And then, of course, I did a little bit of research. And they were like, yeah, they wanted her to talk like a... Like, one of those, like, little infant girls who has a sweet little voice and just doesn't know anything. She is so stupid. Oh, poor me. Like, the way she talked, the way she dressed, the way she acted, up until a point. The first half of that movie, that grown-ass woman is viewed as a child. And the entire time she was being sexualized, and it made me go, ugh. And you can't fight me on that.
No, that's I think it's supposed to make you go bleh.
Yeah, but it also doesn't mean that I have to like it.
Well, you don't have to like the situation.
Or the movie or how they filmed it.
I mean, there's plenty of movies where you don't like situations because of how they make you feel.
Yeah, but it felt voyeuristic. It felt very creepy. And it felt very like, oh, I'm a man and I'm making a movie about the world of ballet. And so I'm going to overtly sexualize my main character by starting her off as a child. And we are going to watch her grow into a woman. She starts as a child. She goes through puberty when she discovers masturbation. Right. And then her sexual desires. And then the night out that she spends with Mila Kunis, where she's, you know, she's aware that she's been drugged and she's making out with Sebastian Stan and she's making out and she's having really gross lesbian sex with Mila Kunis. Like that scene played like porn. It was shot like porn. And I know that because I've watched porns that are shot like that. Like, you know, and so, and then it grows up into her womanhood and her discovering her own, right? And that's when she becomes the Black Swan. All the while, she's having a complete mental breakdown from the stress, from the lack of eating, from the clear eating disorder that she has, from, you know, her issues with her mother, her issues with her boss, who is, by the way, sexually harassing and abusing her the entire time. Which is the same thing that he did to Winona Ryder, which is why she ended up in the hospital for throwing herself in front of a car.
Yeah.
Like, it's gross, and I don't like it.
Yeah, it is gross.
And I'm allowed to be like, this is gross, and I don't like it, but that also can skew the way that I see the film.
I think the film is doing its job in making you see that this is gross.
Yeah.
Men should not be acting like this. No. And
but
to be disgusted with the action.
It's also, a woman would have made this film differently.
And by not making it look like, in a way, reality?
No. I think that a woman could have brought a deft touch to it. And had it not been so overtly gross. It's a gross movie. The way that she acts, how she's sexualized young little girl and her young little girl body, even though she's a full grown adult, like all of it, a woman would have treated it differently. We were just talking about the way, like how we were so glad that Joss Whedon didn't get his hands on Captain Marvel because he would have made that character fucking gross. A good female director would have done this story completely differently. And I get it. This is Darren Aronofsky's story to tell. Fine. It is a movie that people think is classic and incredible, and they love it, and that's fine. I did not love it. I found it gross. As a woman aware of the world and how women are treated in it, and also a woman which this movie would not fly as well today, 14 years later, because of all of the sort of gross misogyny to it, right? women are louder now. We're more aware of these things. We're more able to take a step back and be like, I didn't like that movie because it's gross. Like, and here's why. We're able to say that more now than we were able to 14 years ago when this film came out. Almost 15 years ago. You know, because times have changed and we've been able to, you know, step up and say, we don't like it when men infantilize us and sexualize us and turn us into little girls. That's fucking gross. And I get that this is, you know, I can't say if this was the overall point that he had or if it was just something fun that he had doing. But, like, it's gross. And I did not like it. I watched this movie and I watched it angrily, getting bitterer and bitterer. And then when I talked to Karen about how life really is for ballerinas in ballet companies, which is, by the way, very similar to what we saw.
Well,
yeah.
Sure.
It just made me angrier about the whole thing.
But are you angry at...
I'm angry at all of it.
Are you angry at reality or them just showing you the reality?
A little bit of both. And that's okay.
But what's wrong with showing you the reality?
Because...
if you have a story to tell, whether it makes you feel good or not...
Because they showed it in a way that was a male sexualized fantasy of it.
Maybe that was done on purpose too.
But I still think that this... there's a certain aspect of this film that as I viewed it, I thought, this is like a male's fantasy. And yes, it's showing a reality of the ballet world, which is something that, you know, a lot of people don't kind of think about, right? They don't think about how women are a dime a dozen in the ballet world. They don't think about, you know, how men are treated and brought up as kings and the women are just nothing to be ridiculed and thrown away. It's never about the men need to get stronger to lift these women. It's always that the women need to get thinner so that the men can lift them. Like, there are all these things that Karen opened my eyes to about life in a ballet company that I probably could have guessed, but I didn't want to think about. In fact, even today while I was talking about coworkers, talking with coworkers about this movie, one of them who, you know, is a dancer, he was like, oh yeah, when this movie came out, my dance teacher like brought us all together and was like, do not see that movie. It is filth. It lies about life and reality in the dance world. And I was like, actually, apparently it's very honest about life and reality in the dance world. He was like, I know. I think that's why it triggered her and set her off, because she was a woman who had grown up in a ballet world and was like, so like horrified that she was seeing her life again on stage, that it, instead of being like, you should see this, she was like, don't see it. It's lies. Right. Because the other thing about ballet is that you're so deeply ingrained in the lessons that you learn and the way that you're supposed to be, right? All women have to be these frail little, you know, thin, flat-chested, beautiful things, creatures, right? And they can't be strong and they can't have normal female bodies. They can't have breasts. They can't have curves because it ruins the line. And there's just a sort of like insanity to that, which has been going on for ages, all because some fucking Russian pervert forever ago decided that this is how it has to be. Women were essentially sold into sexual servitude to become ballerinas by the men who would sponsor them to go to these schools and go to these companies and get them better parts, right? They would pay for all this stuff, but what do they get in the meantime? Sex. Like, it's a disgusting history. And so, yeah, I'm upset about learning about this, right? Because it's gross and you look at history and you go, fuck, women just never stood a chance, did they? Like, we've been boned from the beginning. But also, the movie itself was filmed in a way that the men got away with everything. Everything was good for them. Vincent Cassell's character, Tony, or Thomas, or whatever the fuck it was, I don't even care. Tomo, you know, he clearly was sexually taking advantage of all the women in his company, but especially Natalie Portman, who is played off to be like this innocent little child at the beginning. Like, oh, she's so delicate and beautiful and frail, and she's, you know, just this timid little creature. like a child would be, and he sexualizes her and he abuses her and all this stuff. And then at the end, she kisses him fiercely and he gets the roaring applause of the audience. But he's been sexually mistreating this woman the entire film, but nothing happens to him. And it pissed me off. And I thought that the lesbian sex scene was gratuitous, unnecessary, and filmed with the point of view of a man. It was filmed from a male, like,
well, I think we would have seen a lot more
of obsessive. And I didn't like it. And I'm allowed not to like it for all of these reasons. Like, is it a great film that people love? Yes, sure. Why not? I didn't love it because I found it gross and upsetting for 1,000 reasons. How life is in the ballet, how it was filmed, how it was written, how it was portrayed. I didn't like it. I didn't like it for all of those reasons. Anyways, do you want to like just get to the ratings or?
Well, a couple other tidbits that some listeners may or may not care about at this point.
Isn't this the point of this podcast, is to watch these movies and have a proper discussion about them?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It was made for $13 million.
Yeah, it was.
It made $107 million domestic, $224 million internationally, and it also made another $30 million on home media for a total of $361 million. It won 98 awards, including an Oscar. It was nominated for a total of 5 Oscars, including Best Leading Actress for Natalie Portman, who won that. Picture of the Year. It was nominated for Picture of the Year, but that went to The King's Speech, of course, because we've talked about this year in the Oscars a few times now. Darren Aronofsky was nominated for Best Director, but it went to Tom Hooper for The King's Speech. It also was nominated for Cinematography, which went to Wally Pfister for Inception.
Pfister, I hardly know her.
And Best Film Editing, which went to Angus Wall and Kirk Baxter for The Social Network. Yeah, so, I mean, we've got Natalie Portman, which, real quick, what's your favorite Natalie Portman movie?
My favorite Natalie Portman movie?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, my favorite thing that Natalie Portman has ever done is
the SNL.
Natalie's Rap. Natalie's Rap and Natalie's Rap 2.0 are some of the greatest things that she has ever done. They're some of my favorite Lonely Island sketches. I think that she is fantastic in them. My favorite Natalie Portman film, that's a tough one. I remember enjoying Closer the first time I saw it, but I don't know if I would like it anymore. I never did see Jackie. I mean, I can't say Thor the Dark World because it was terrible. I do like the original Thor a lot. Your Highness was terrible. No Strings Attached, looked stupid. I refuse to watch I'm Still Here because, like, fuck Joaquin Phoenix. The other Berlin girl was a piece of shit. Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium was shockingly heartfelt. It made me cry. I do enjoy V for Vendetta. I, you know, say something about the motherfucking prequels, bitch. I can't. I do love Garden State a lot. You know what? Nope. I take that back. My favorite Natalie Portman film is Where the Heart Is.
You know, that is, wow. That's
such a good fucking movie. I was looking
through
her
IMDb and I didn't see that one for whatever reason.
Yeah, it took me a second to kind of remember. Where the
Heart Is is such a good movie.
Such a good movie. She's great in Heat. She's great in Leon the Professional.
Yeah, Leon the Professional has always been one of my favorites.
She's fun in Mars Attacks, but there's something about Where the Heart Is. It's just such a cheesy, heartfelt, happy film. And she's so, so good in it. So I would have to say that. But ultimately,
that's only 6 years into her career, yeah, too.
My favorite thing that Natalie Portman has ever done is Natalie's Rap and Natalie's Rap 2.0. I think that that's flawless.
Yeah, mine, Where the Heart Is, of course. V for Vendetta, I really love.
V for Vendetta is great. Yeah.
But then Leon the Professional, I will always really love that movie. And I personally like Black Swan.
And that's fine. And I love her as Jane Foster in Thor. I think she's great in Thor.
I really like her performance in this movie.
She does a fantastic job playing the duality of this, like, young, innocent baby girl. And then this, like, badass bitch by the end of it. She does a fantastic job, and lesser actors would have done worse. Yes. I will say that she is fantastic. Mila Kunis, who's next up on that list, shockingly good in this film. Because, let's be honest, shut up, Meg. Like, she hasn't done a lot. That's great.
How come I never get any lines in these things?
Shut up, Meg.
I really like her forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Jupiter Ascending is a personal...
Guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure. I know how terrible that movie is. And
not
I
mine.
Love watching it. And then we have Vincent Cassel.
Who, that motherfucker got to be married to Monica Bellucci.
Married to Monica Bellucci.
One of the most beautiful women to ever exist.
I forever will be
and
so jealous of that man.
And now she's dating Tim Burton. She likes them weird. She likes the weird looking guys.
Those weird looking guys.
Vincent Cassel is a great actor at being a smarmy piece of shit. He's so good at it. At you watching him and you're just like, God, this guy is so fucking unlikable. Of course he is. It's Vincent Cassel.
A couple of movies that I think people, if they haven't seen, should definitely check out. The first being Brotherhood of the Wolf.
That movie is so fucking sexy. It's
such a great
movie.
So and he,
goddamn sexy.
He does a great job in that one, along with a couple other actors in it as well, do a great job.
Mm-hmm. Monica Bellucci.
Including Monica Bellucci.
Man, that movie was one of the reasons that as a teenager, I was like, maybe I'm not straight.
She's the one to do it.
She was the beginning of my, like, her and Cate Blanchett were my, like, huh, wait a minute moments. And then Ava Green just tipped it right over.
Another movie people should check out that he is the lead actor in is a movie called La Haine. There's no reason for me to even tell you anything about it. Just go watch it. It's on a lot of film critics and movie buffs and creatives' top four favorite films of all time. Not everybody, but you know, there's that group where you're just like, they're either people like, Jenna Ortega just loves those kind of very weird, interesting movies like La Haine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, people should check out more of Vincent Cassel. I think it was also the villain, kind of villain in, Ocean's 12.
Mm-hmm. He, is a voice in Shrek.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's a French actor. He is delightfully creepy and weird in everything he does. He always kind of plays the brooding bad guy, a slightly, like, weird character. You know, he is incredible at what he does, which is being wildly unlikable.
Huh.
And also, he's kind of hot.
Barbara Hershey, playing the mother.
Fucking good. What do I know her from?
You know, I have looked, and I can't find it. I've never seen... Insidious. Looks like there's one of the later X-Files, the 2018 X-Files revival.
Boo!
No,
I know her. She's been kind of this great character actress for years.
I think that's, she's just been in things forever. 107 projects since,
Somebody's screaming at the...
Since the 60s.
She was in this! I mean, she's so good in this movie. The mom / the queen is just an incredible character, and she does a really, really good job. You know, creepy and gross and a little weird and, you know, a little like the way that she treats her daughter is very, you know, she infantilizes her daughter too, to an extent, kind of keeps her locked in this childlike way, but she does a fantastic job. Oh, she was Mary Magdalene in The Last Temptation of Christ. Hannah and her sisters was a big one. Oh. The Natural.
She was in The Natural?
Yeah. As a character named Harriet Bird.
Oh, man. For a second, I was going to say, I might have to watch The Natural again and try to pick her out. Because when you said that, I was like, oh, I wonder if she's the assassin at the beginning.
She's definitely one of those, you know, she had a very big career in the 60s. And then kind of faded a bit and then has come back. But yeah, like I feel like I've heard Barbara Hershey's name my whole life.
Good for her.
Yeah, good for her.
Winona Ryder.
Oh, I didn't fucking know was in this movie.
Do you have a favorite Winona Ryder? Or at least something, it doesn't even have to be just...
I mean, Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice is up there, I mean...
Girl Interrupted is a flawless film, which I don't think I could actually watch ever again, but it's a great fucking film. I just can't watch it ever again because I think I'd cry too hard.
Spock's mom in Star Trek.
You know what? Destination Wedding with Keanu Reeves was really fucking good.
Destination Wedding was a really good movie.
Good movie.
That movie surprised me.
It played like a play. It's mainly just the two people talking the whole time.
Yeah, if you guys would just want to watch a movie where Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves just talk to each other.
Charming as hell.
At a wedding. Oh my God,
she was really good, of course.
Surprisingly good.
And Edward Scissorhands. And I mean, she's been in a thousand things. And I'm never unhappy to see her.
Of course.
You know, I'm glad she kind of overcame the theft of it all. But a man would have bounced back from that a lot sooner than she ever did. Yeah. So. Misogyny. Oh, I do love Mr. Deeds.
She is like a great lot. In Mr. Deeds.
And I love Mr. Deeds as a movie. Because of you. I to this day, even today, I swear to God, I accidentally snuck up on a coworker and startled
them.
Anytime
I sneak up on somebody,
and I was just like very sneaky,
very, very sneaky, sir.
Very sneaky, sneaky.
I'm very, very sneaky.
Oh, you kind of snuck up on me there.
I am very, very sneaky, sir.
I see that.
Fucking John Turturro in that movie is amazing.
He's so great. Then of course I didn't know because I probably haven't watched before we watched you and I rewatched Swan Lake yesterday. I don't think ever since I really got to know who Sebastian Stan was.
Yeah.
So I had no idea he was in this movie. And
he
then,
was baby.
And then when I did find out he was in it, I was like, but who could he have played? It's mostly just dancers and he's definitely not one of the dancers. Sure enough, he wasn't one of the dancers.
No,
but
he's one of the suitors.
When he comes up on the screen, I was like, that was him? He was the one playing that role this whole time? Because I've seen this movie. This was probably my fourth time watching this movie.
Oh, he was baby.
And yeah, had no idea that was Sebastian Stan.
Cute and charming, smarmy. Definitely on board with drugging a woman's cocktail, unfortunately. But yeah, he's there in a short little bit, and he's a sweet young man, and he's so cute. You know, I did mention last week that this was going to be a Sebastian Stan double feature, because we had just finished Infinity War. I think that I had seen pictures and GIFs of his, you know, role in this film, but I hadn't actually seen it, of course. But yeah, he's just sweet young man.
Sweet young man.
Yeah. Just not sweet in the way young men should be sweet.
He's
kind of gross young man.
Yeah, he's not
but
a great guy.
Baby face.
He's definitely baby face Sebastian Stan.
Yeah. Sure. And it's funny seeing, you know, Bucky Barnes and Jane Foster interact. Thor would be so jealous.
As Natalie Portman's character, Nina, starts evolving into the swan, into the black swan, it's really subtle at the beginning as she's dancing around and practicing the choreography. You hear like a fluttering, really light fluttering, like wings or feathers being flapped about. And then by the time she actually becomes the black swan, the has escalated to even more.
No, I know. Like, her actual, like, creation to the Black Swan was interesting. Like, I liked the, you know, how she was essentially growing wings on her back.
Yeah, scratching them.
Yeah, very clever.
Out.
Although, you know, was it that or was it her mental illness and her, you know, compulsive scratching disorder that she had? That's the other thing about this movie, is it's very hard to be like, what was she hallucinating and what was real, right?
Yeah.
And that didn't make me angry. I always do enjoy a bit of a, you know, a story like that.
Yeah, I like guessing.
Yeah. You know, I don't know whether or not Winona Ryder's character actually does stab herself in the face with, you know, right. a file, or if that was something that she
that
did.
Is one of the things that I really like a lot about this movie was the body horror elements. Yeah. Because
there are some parts that make you just go, yeah.
They made me, a movie that makes me uncomfortable is better, especially when it comes to horror, body horror, anything like that. If it makes me uncomfortable, that I like that more than when a movie just tries to scare me.
Yeah.
Whatever tricks that they do to make you try to gross you out, it's one thing. But when what I'm watching is more disturbing or uncomfortable, that has a more visceral reaction to me.
And I will say that the effects were very real. Like the cuts around her fingers.
The pulling on the hangnail.
God,
like,
I mean, we've all had a hangnail that has felt like it's gone all the way up.
It feels like it's going to happen, but then to actually watch it, as if it ripped all the way back. It's just makes my fingers hurt.
There's a online cartoonist with, I want to say his name is David Ellis. I'm pretty sure it's David Ellis. He was on BuzzFeed for a really long time. Everybody knows his stuff. But he did a cartoon where somebody pulls at a hangnail and ends up pulling like an entire seam around their body, and then their whole skin just like falls off of them like a baby bell cheese. And that's what I think every time I have a hangnail. I don't get hangnails as often now that I've stopped biting my nails. That when I used to bite my nails as a younger person, I would get hangnails a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Now I find that, you know, I don't get them as often, or they're not as bad. But a bad hangnail, it's nothing worse.
Yeah.
I like to poke it and feel the pain.
Gross. One fact I remember coming out of this movie was that Natalie Portman married the choreographer on the set of Black Swan. They got married 2 years after the movie was released, and they were married for just under 12 years and had 2 children.
Yeah, I believe, if memory served, he cheated on her. Which, how do you cheat on the most beautiful woman in Natalie Portman?
Beautiful, most talented, most... Did I say beautiful yet?
Yeah, no, you have a couple of times.
And I'm probably going to say it one more time. Natalie Portman, how?
How do you do it?
She's...
What's the line that she says in Natalie's rap at 2.0? My man dance, but he's not a ballerino. Yeah, he twinkle his toes, but he give me good D, though. Rap a good burrito.
Jesus
Great Christ. Fucking line. I love it so much. Ted Potsdam, Lee, fucking think I snack on. Blackout and go motherfucking Black Swan. So good. Yeah, Benjamin Millipede, you know, cheated on Natalie Portman. That's all I can think about. He does play the prince, the actor who, or the you know, the ballerino who is the prince in Black Swan. He also has choreographed a bunch of, apparently he worked on Dune. Like, he's done a lot of stuff in, you know, in movies over the course of his career. But, she met her husband there for a short time. Do you have a favorite scene in this movie?
It's probably towards the end of the movie when she essentially has become the Black Swan.
Mm-hmm.
That whole process is beginning. I believe it's when she first goes on stage that night, the last night.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this moment where the camera is catching Natalie Portman's profile, and she's I think going upstairs or something. I'm seeing it in my mind, and I just see Natalie Portman's face and the way the light's hitting her and her makeup and her costume and the music, and it's all, you know, this woman who's been going through all this shit that nobody should have to go through just to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And she, through all of the drama and the trauma, is it great that she doesn't care what happens to her as long as she
is perfect.
It's perfect, essentially, is what is happening. And to me, I'm like, no, it's not worth it. But I've never, you know, it's the same thing with Whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, I even wrote down, this movie is the ballet version of Whiplash.
Maybe that's why I really don't like it. Because I'm just sitting back here going, I wouldn't deal with that. I wouldn't put up with that shit. Where's the fucking mom? This is some bullshit.
I mean, they it's pretty much a flip-flop in gender roles. It's I mean, the abuser is still male. You've got Natalie Portman and Miles Teller's characters being the performers who are trying to achieve something that they believe is greater than themselves. And you've got, you know, J.K. Simmons and Vincent Cassel are...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Are, you know, the teachers.
Yes. Maybe that's why I really didn't like this movie. Is I'm just like, oh, fuck, we're just another Whiplash. God, I fucking hate Whiplash so fucking much.
And then the mom and Paul Reiser's character are pretty much the...
Yeah.
Like, trying to convince them to be...
I think the mom was pushing her towards
getting close to like Carrie vibes on how insane the mom was really getting, but at the same time the movie makes it seem like the mom had also been a ballerina who was abused and knows what the world is truly like and is trying to protect.
Why would you push your child into it?
That's the thing. I'm not in this world. I don't know how. I understand that you're trying to reach a goal or a life's dream of doing this, and you'll sacrifice everything, including your own life, in some cases, for perfection or to get approval from the teacher.
Yeah.
Essentially. And I think a lot of even kids go through that in school.
God, I'm so glad I'm not like that.
And
so glad I'm not a perfectionist. I'm like, I can't tell you how often in my life I've just shrugged my shoulders. I'm just like, nah, it's gonna. Like, you know, and we make sure that this podcast is excellent. In my own writing, I try to do really well. But, like, I'm so glad that I'm not to that point where a part of my mental illness, like, latches onto perfectionism and is like, no, this is what we must strive for. It's funny that you brought up that scene where she becomes the black swan and gets the feathers. Because in the play, that moment is notoriously hard on the ballerina who is portraying both the white and black swan, because she has to do 32 fouettes. I know I'm mispronouncing that word.
Fouette. A fouette is a turn on one leg with the opposing leg opening and closing in a la saccone position.
But she has to do 32 spins.
Yeah.
And the type of spin that she does is very complicated. 32 in a row, same spot, one right after the other. Again and again.
Ending
again,
of her doing like.
Here's the thing, though. In the movie, she only does, like, 12, and it's a different spin. It's not the actual spin that you're supposed to do for Swan Lake.
Yeah.
It's one that is easier and somewhat messier, and I only know this because that was something that Karen ranted to me about for about 10 minutes last night on the phone, which I found wildly entertaining.
Also, halfway through the spins, she starts morphing into the swan.
Yeah.
Which, and then it becomes like kind of a, there's a moment where there's this effect that they tried to do, and it came off a little floating head, like her face was put on another woman's body.
And that's going to lead into the fact that while everybody claimed that Natalie Portman did, quote unquote, most of her own dancing, there was also a...
I know the dancer, the double,
came out and
spoke against.
Her name was...
And said, oh, hang on.
The dance double was a woman named Sarah Lane, who is an American ballet theater dancer. She served as the dance double for Portman in the film. Apparently, there has been a lot of back and forth as to how much was Sarah and how much was Natalie, because at a certain point, there was footage that they released, the production company released themselves, showing Sarah doing the dances and then them taking Natalie Portman's head and putting it on her body, right? But then they took that footage away during awards season so that people would think that, oh, it was actually Natalie Portman. What I do know is that training for the better part of a year to learn ballet as an adult will not get you to the point.
Oh no, I don't think Natalie Portman was even claiming that she was at that level.
They kind of were.
Natalie Portman herself, or her
I think it was more like studio. Her people in the studio were like, look at how much she did. And she's like, yes, I kind of did this one. She also did not thank Sarah Lane in her Oscar acceptance speech, which is interesting. Whether that was unintentional or not, we will never know. The people around this movie tried to make it seem like Sarah Lane did a lot less than what she actually did. And Sarah Lane herself said that she was naive and unrepresented when she signed up to do this movie, and that essentially the producers kind of took advantage of that by getting her to do more and crediting her for less. You know, I don't think that there's any bad blood between Sarah Lane and Natalie Portman, ultimately, in the end. And there are definitely moments where the camera is pulled back in a wide shot and, you know, the people doing the dancing are kind of fuzzy.
You can't quite make them out. Yeah. They kind of look like Natalie Portman, but you really can't. Yeah. No, I noticed
but
that too.
I don't believe that Natalie Portman ever learned to stand on point. From the research that I did, I could find nothing to prove that she could learn to stand on point. And standing on point is notoriously one of the hardest things you can do. There is, you know, there are photos that have gone around the internet for years showing a ballerina standing on point, and in one of her feet's in the point shoe, which is lovely and delicate and, you know, soft and feminine, and the other is her actual foot, which is bloodied and broken and fucked up, because the stress that ballet takes on your body is so much, and then ballerinas are not supposed to show any of it. You know, they're not allowed to be like, look at how hard I've worked and look at what I've done. They just need to be this graceful thing dancing across the stage. I've seen Swan Lake in person. I went with Karen to see it done by, now the company's not called the Bolshoi anymore, but it was written for the Bolshoi company by Tchaikovsky. The name has since changed, and off the top of my head, I don't remember what it is, and I'm not going to do the research to find it. But I have seen Swan Lake performed by the company that it was written for, and it was a good 15 years ago. It could have even been around the time that this movie was coming out. I don't remember a whole lot of it, except that it was beautiful, right? It's a beautiful ballet. It's so pretty. Karen also took me to see the Moroccan ballet, like the Royal Moroccan Ballet Company, do Cinderella. And I remember a lot more of Cinderella because to emulate the glass slippers, they took the ballerina who was playing Cinderella and dipped her feet into glitter. So her feet were shiny as she danced around stage.
Yep.
And she was barefoot the entire time, whereas everybody else was in point shoes. So she was still doing all this shit barefoot, which was insane and stunning. I would like to see more ballet. I've seen, you know, the Nutcracker done a couple of times, mainly local productions. I do love a good ballet. Swan Lake is definitely worth revisiting. Would you like to go see a ballet with me, my dear?
I would love to see. I have no issue with watching ballet.
It is something. I mean, it's a gorgeous thing.
When it's based off music that I'm familiar with. Like, I know Swan Lake. I know Nutcracker. That's about it.
Yeah. You know, there's...
I watched ballet. Like, I remember watching... There's a version of the Nutcracker that I've seen on TV. Mm-hmm. That was all ballet.
Were you a kid? Did you watch it on like KHIZ or KTLA?
Probably.
That was the Seattle Ballet Company doing that.
Was it really?
Yeah. Since you made me watch Black Swan, can I make you watch Center Stage with me? Because Center Stage is a ballet movie that I fucking love. It's so bad. It's so bad, but I love it so much. So Center Stage came out in 2000. It's a group of teenagers from various backgrounds enroll at the American Ballet Academy in New York to make it as ballet dancers, and each one deals with problems and stresses of training and getting ahead in the world of dance. It stars Amanda Schull, who hasn't done much, Ethan Stiefel, who hasn't done much, Sasha Raditsky, who we mainly know is just kind of one of those, like, excellent smarmy douchebag villains in most movies from the 90s and 2000s. Zoe Saldana is in it, a very young Zoe Saldana. You know, Peter Gallagher is in it. It is so fucking stupid and so fucking good. The music slaps. The ballet at the end of the movie makes no sense because there are costume and hair changes that could not possibly happen in the time that they would need to. I mean, for God's sakes, at one point the main character's hair is taken from like full long lovely locks and put into cornrows in the course of like 2 minutes, which is impossible, and then back to the long and lovely locks, which is ultimately impossible.
I wonder if that was the beginning or part of, and there was another movie that was the beginning of all these like couples, they meet and then they dance, like a lot of dance. Like, remember Save the Last Dance with Julia Stiles?
Yeah.
That came out the year after Center Stage. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was a time there where, especially in the early 2000s...
There was a minute there where, like, where, you know...
there was just a lot of...
Dancers were, you know, a thing, right? I can totally see it. Center Stage and, like, Blue Wave? No, what is the name of that movie? The surfing movie that, I don't know. There was a minute there where all these, like, just kind of terrible teenage dramas and movies were, like, my jam with Jesse and my other friends.
Are you talking about the one with, what's her name from Fast and Furious?
Yes, I think so. God, what was that movie called?
Michelle Rodriguez.
Was she in it?
She's in a surfer one. And you said Blue Wave, which reminded me that it's called Blue Something.
Gonna have to Google it now. And as soon as it hits me. Okay.
Who can get it first?
Surfing movie, Blue Crush.
That's right there. 2002. Oh man,
it's funny because I didn't even actually finish looking it up. I was just like, remembered I it? Just had finally hit. I was like, blue. The soundtracks for Center Stage and Blue Crush fucking slap so hard that I might make my coworkers listen to them at work tomorrow.
Blue Crush came out a year after The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, see, like, all these movies were, like, movies that I saw as a teenager, and they're bad, but I love them. And this movie is great, but I hated it. So, you know, well, art is subjective.
You asked me what my favorite part... What's your favorite part of the movie?
I like Sebastian Stan's face.
Oh, my God, of course.
I like Sebastian Stan's face, and I'm just going to finish up with that. Like, wow. I did enjoy the madness of her mental illness, although her mental illness was brought on by the strict competitive nature of the ballet world, the way that men are treated as gods and women are treated as, you know, nothings to be thrown away. It was interesting watching her mental decline for sure. I don't know. Like, I can't think of any particular shot that stuck with me. I did find it kind of fun at the very end when everybody realizes that she's bleeding and they all start freaking out. It made me think of that scene in Moulin Rouge where, you know, the whole audience is like erupting in applause. And Robin, sir... Producer Robin has been peacefully asleep this entire time, and then he decided that the place that he was going to lay on next was my laptop. It's a good thing I don't need it anymore, buddy. I liked the very end when she fades into white, because I'd like to think that she actually is dead, that she actually dies.
Oh, yeah. I believe she did.
There is some, you know, some people think that maybe she didn't.
But I think it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the way the movie...
Yeah.
Is...
Well, I mean, the movie is a retelling of the story of Swan Lake.
Yeah, and
the main character at the end of Swan Lake kills herself.
Yeah, and she even says it in the middle of the movie that that's what happens to the White Swan and...
Odalette, I think. Odalie and Odalette.
So I do believe that Nina is to believe to be dead by the end.
I would like to know... like what happens next, right? Because everybody's expecting a curtain call. It does make you wonder what progresses over the next couple of days about that.
I like to believe that now she did achieve this
perfection
and will be always known as this, but at the same time, just like all fame, fame is fleeting.
I don't know. I think that
I think Mila Kunis's character is now going to take over that spot.
But I think that people are always going to remember the ballerina who killed herself
for a while, for a few years.
Well, I guess it reminds me of that story that Roz tells in the first episode of Frasier about, I think the actress's name was Lupi Valdez.
Ever heard of Lupi Valdez?
Who?
Lupi Valdez, the movie star in the 30s. Well, her career hit the skids, so she decided she'd make one final stab at immortality. She figured if she couldn't be remembered for her movies, she'd be remembered for the way she died. And all Lupi wanted was to be remembered. So, she plans this lavish suicide. Flowers, candles, silk sheet, white satin gown, full hair and makeup, the works. She takes the overdose of pills, lays on the bed, and imagines how beautiful she's going to look on the front page of tomorrow's newspaper. Unfortunately, the pills don't set well with the enchilada combo plate she sadly chose as her last meal. She stumbles to the bathroom, trips and goes headfirst into the toilet, and that's how they found her.
Remind me again how it worked for Lupi. Last seen with her head in the toilet.
All she wanted was to be remembered. Will you ever forget that story?
Are they ever going to forget the ballerina who literally killed herself in order to be perfect for Swan Lake? I mean, that's something that goes down in history. Right,
it
that's its
down,
own type of immortality.
I think the people who are alive during the moment,
there would
will
at
always
least
remember.
Be a Wikipedia page about it, and every once in a while, BuzzFeed would pop up with a 12 Wikipedia pages that are going to scare
somebody
you.
Somebody would
you
say,
read
"Why isn't
bedtime.
This a movie?"
And it would be that
this
you know,
is an amazing movie.
You know, Nina, the girl who died during Swan Lake. So I'm just saying that that would bring its own sort of immortality to it.
Something else that was talked about when this movie came out was its similarities to the anime Perfect Blue.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that. Darren Aronofsky himself is like, no, nope. But apparently
he acknowledged the similarities, like saying, yes, I understand that there are similarities. But he says that it was not inspired by it, but he also wasn't one of the writers. So one of the writers could have easily
been.
Yeah,
but apparently like there's some shot for shot.
There's some, well, that's, I think when it comes to writing versus cinematography and the way they set things up is one thing. I own Perfect Blue on DVD somewhere. I think it's in my folder over there. It is very much similar. I mean, a pop singer gives up her career to become an actress, but she slowly goes insane when she starts being stalked by an obsessed fan and what seems to be a ghost of her past. But spoiler alert for Perfect Blue for everybody out there, you know, skip ahead 30 seconds. But by the end of it, it is believed that she killed herself thinking that she was. It turns out she was
the
person,
stalker.
The stalker,
yeah.
The killer, the, you know, it was all in her head. And but somebody else who's trying to achieve perfection. And also believing that somebody else is after her position and stealing her dream from her.
Kind of the same story.
Very similar to that. But also, even if he didn't copy it, he's still copying Swan Lake.
Yeah. which I think is in the public domain anyways. But you know who has achieved perfection without doing anything?
The cat.
Producer Robin. He's the sweetest and softest boy, as he's now currently asleep on my laptop, just letting me pet his cute little face.
So, Maggie, what would you give Swan Lake out of 5 stars?
I'm going to give it a 2.
All right.
I didn't like it. I didn't like how it handled a lot of things, and I don't plan on ever watching it again, and I didn't like it. What about you, Caveman?
I have given it 4 stars. I really like it. Yes. It makes me feel uncomfortable. Yes, there's a handful of movies that I love that I don't watch all the time because of how awkward or weird they make me feel, or I just don't want to be bummed out.
Yeah, this is not exactly lighthearted fare. This movie ends and you're like, I mean, Darren Aronofsky doesn't end movies on a heartfelt moment. It's always like a, oh, fuck.
You didn't. I mean, Requiem for the Dream. I don't think I could ever get you to watch that movie again.
No, no, I will never watch
like
that movie
like,
again.
Hey, Maggie, let's do an Aronofsky.
Nope. Even if it was on this list, I would not watch it.
I do want to watch The Wrestler. That's still been one on my list that I want to watch. But of course, that's like the only movie of his I haven't seen.
I
don't
know if I like Mickey Rourke that much.
Sure, I get that. He won an Oscar as well for his role in The Wrestler, and I think seeing him in an award-winning role I've never seen before because everything I've seen him in.
He won an Oscar for that, didn't he?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's good in it, but I also don't care about wrestling that much.
No.
So.
Yeah. If you're going to watch a wrestling movie and be
like, devastated at the end of it?
I bet The Wrestler is more devastating.
Oh.
But Iron Claw is.
I actually do kind of want to watch Iron Claw.
Iron Claw is a great movie.
Yeah, it looks legit. But I'm also never necessarily in the mood to watch a bummer fucking movie. So, you know.
I do watch a lot of bummer movies.
And you watch them without me.
For a reason.
Yeah. And then I'm there for your palate cleanser.
Maggie, we need to watch something fun.
Okie dokie, honey. Let's put on Lower Decks.
So, Maggie.
Yes, caveman.
I have two questions for you.
Hit it.
When it feels scary to jump, Ian, that is exactly when you jump. Otherwise, you end up staying in the same place your whole life, and that I can't do.
Play that again for me, please.
All right.
When it feels scary to jump, Ian, that is exactly when you jump. Otherwise, you end up staying in the same place your whole life, and that I can't do.
Is that from that Jessica Chastain movie that he did about the mobsters? What is that from? You've stumped me. Good job, sir. You've stumped me. What's it called?
A Most Violent Year.
Fucking got it.
The fact,
see?
You didn't know the title, but you
didn't
knew.
Didn't know the title. It was something about them in a restaurant. I was like, this seems like it would be in a mob scene. And I know that he made that one mob movie with Jessica Chastain. You didn't stump me.
Man, so close. So close.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to start getting weird with it. Or just, you know, don't. Like,
this is too much fun, so I'm going to keep trying.
Okay. Well, you've got some questions for me, so go.
So, Maggie, yes. Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made this movie better?
No. No, I... Like, as much as I enjoyed Sebastian Stan being in this movie, it didn't make me like the movie anymore. It wasn't like the rating was higher because Sebastian Stan is in it. So, no, I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much if Oscar Isaac had been in it.
What if Sebastian Stan had been Vincent Cassell's character?
He would have been too young for it. Yeah. Yeah, Vincent Cassell, like, that character was supposed to be a middle-aged pervert, not
very young.
Very young pervert.
Child.
Yeah.
Well, so, when it comes to Oscar Isaac, question number two, which character would you have had him play?
He would have been the other suitor opposite Sebastian Stan.
I knew you were going to do it. I knew it because then you'd
where
have...
Where else do I put him?
Because then you have Oscar Isaac and Sebastian Stan with Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman. You're just like...
Bang City.
Commence.
Bang City. I wouldn't want him to... I think he could have done a good job, especially these days. He could have gone, and by that I mean just because he's an older man.
Right.
He would have been good as the Vincent Cassell character. There wasn't a lot of other men in that movie.
Well, it's like his character in Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Where he's very much
so
a sexual predator.
Yeah. That awful mustache. But he sings.
He does have a singing moment. So did the guy from Ex Machina, but.
Yeah.
Or no, he danced.
Yeah, he
one danced. One sang, one danced, mm-hmm. Another one played the guitar. None of them great guys.
No, Oscar's really good at playing like a smarmy, unlikable character, which is why I think he would have been good for a short cameo, because I actually can't fathom anybody else but Vincent Cassell playing that character, because he's French and creepy. And so, you know, I wouldn't want to put Oscar Isaac's most perfect and beautiful face in there. But, like, yeah, I want to see Oscar Isaac and Sebastian Stan on screen together. And hopefully I will get that one day in the Marvel Universe. But until then, I'll just have it in my dreams. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Black Swan, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed making it for you. Coming up next on the podcast, we've got Inside Out, which is going to make me cry pretty hard, so that's going to be a fun one to move on to after this. And fuck, am I going to cry? Oh boy. And after that, we've also got our bonus episode for December dropping very soon. In it, we are going to be pitting four different Christmas Carol movies against each other to try to find out which one is the best. Though, spoiler alert, it's probably The Muppets. Let's be honest here. But we're very excited about that particular podcast, and that is still to come. Of course, we have a lot of more fun stuff coming for the rest of this year and going into 2025. And we thank you very much for being along for the ride. We love all of you. You're great people. And just thank you for taking the time to listen to our silly little show, because it makes us happy doing it. And we hope that it makes you happy too. You can always find us at Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast. And you can write us any of your thoughts and questions and comments and concerns at moviemingle@gmail.com. You can find the link to that email in the description of the episode below. Please feel free to rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice. I know for at least one instance, sup Randy, that we were somebody's number one podcast on their Spotify Wrapped for the year, which makes us thrilled. So thank you very much for that. And yeah, just keep enjoying our silly little show. We're glad that you do too. We love you for it. Until next time, you know, go out, take your anti-anxiety meds, do not trust the older French man that's trying to shove his tongue down your throat, and go mingle. Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar?
I'm a little confused.
Oh, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga, 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 toga.